Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Brace yourselves for unknowable horror, because the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program has returned. Yes, Nerdy Show's beloved RPG audio drama of black comedy and Lovecraftian horror is back with an all-new series, a chilling tale called The Terrible Secret of Lot X. Head to CthulhuMystery.com or find the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program wherever you procure fine podcasts. Succumb to the maddening call of Cthulhu.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. It contains content that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. All Nerdy Show podcasts are made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. Discover the many ways you can join in at nerdyshow.com. All right, so we're doing another design episode.
Yeah.
You guys like doing this, making this game?
Hooray.
I do.
I prefer playing it, but...
So we've got a special guest today and somebody who will be joining us in Max's campaign. So as always, I'm Josh, your host. I've got with me today Max.
Hey.
Liam.
Yo.
And got our buddy Andrew.
Hello out there.
TB named campaign.
Oh yeah, we still don't have a name, do we?
I know. We have asked several times.
Got a few things to get into today. We're excited about the upcoming campaign. There's a bunch of stuff we didn't cover last design episode. We got into the calendar, we got into fauna, stuff like that. We didn't get into moon phases.
All right.
I want to talk about that a little bit because we got two moons and how they should overlap and like what do we think of holidays related to those. I want to get into magic. I want to get in a little bit of step four, and I want to talk about kingdoms other than the Akhenoshans because we are very light on those.
I have so much information on the Goth City States.
Great.
Prepped.
Okay. So let's talk about moon phases, right? So we named our moons last episode. The regular moon that we know and love now has a ring. It's probably still 28 day cycle, roughly.
Might as well.
Everybody cool with that?
Yep.
Okay.
Give or take every decade.
So that's Aphene, but we have Zerusha now, the black moon, who is closer, so can eclipse the white moon.
And smaller, right?
And smaller. But it's actually much closer than people probably think, right? For this to all be true, for it to be inside of the orbit of the white moon. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So it needs because it's closer and smaller, it needs a pretty fast cycle compared to the white moon. So what do we think about how long it should last? I mean, half...
Our week is set 10 days?
10 days.
10 days. That's why the week is the week, right? Like, why did we change it? 10-day moon.
Yeah, we could do that. 10 days isn't bad.
10-day works.
I was thinking like 18, but...
10.
10 works, yeah. That's pretty fast.
It would offer a good explanation as to the change.
Mm-hmm.
Some new crazy thing that's happening to kind of base it off of.
I'll tell you why we picked a 10-day week, because 10 is easy to deal with. And also, why should we make this a 10-day moon? 10 is easy to deal with. That'd be great.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, 10-day cycle. So, Zerusha, 10-day orbit.
How often does it eclipse? I don't remember the name of the other moon.
Aphene.
How often does it eclipse Aphene?
It eclipses Aphene. Well, because even if the orbit is 10 days, that doesn't mean it'll eclipse it twice.
Because Aphene will also be moving.
Right. Well, because the axis, the angle,
mm-hmm.
was our the tilt. So our moon right now is on a 5-degree tilt, which is why it doesn't, you know, and the Earth is tilted, which is why it doesn't eclipse the sun every time it goes around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Inclination is what it's called.
Inclination,
declination.
Something. I don't want to figure out the inclination or declination. Nope. I just want to know how often a year it is eclipsed.
Well, what are the like year breakdowns on eclipses? What's the average on how often the moon eclipses the sun? It's a huge amount of time.
Yeah, but I figure for something with a 28-day rotation and a 10-day rotation, in a smaller scale, it would happen more often.
Right, but getting the one with the sun is probably a good reference point to build off of.
Bottom line, Google is doing this, pulling it from earthsky.org. It says, bottom line, any calendar year has a minimum of 4 eclipses, 2 solar, 2 lunar.
Okay.
Most years have only 4, but depending on the year, it may have 5, 6, or as many as 7.
I'd call it 8, bottom.
Well, we could just have a thing where, like,
unremarkable
year. There's an eclipse a month. There could be an eclipse every 30 days.
Of the moons.
Of the moons, yes.
Yeah, but not the triple eclipse. So maybe one a year of the of
ooh, the triple
all 3.
Eclipse?
Yeah.
Would that happen on one of our 4
that would happen,
high holy days?
That would happen very rarely.
Don't we have a fire day and an ice day? So ice would be when everything...
No, even then.
No, we didn't do that.
What I'm saying, would that be a good day to have that on our...
Because we
the
did...
day the sun dies and the moon dies?
Something like that. We could do... Well, because they're all together, right? So mm-hmm. The lunar eclipses, you know, obviously when the sun... when the Earth actually... The shadow of the Earth passes over the
like
moon.
Like blocks the moon, yeah.
Right. Solar is when the moon is in front of the sun. And what we call them, like, sublunar events.
That makes sense.
So
there might be a term for that, because there are
planets
with more than one moon.
Most planets. Or rather, most moons.
Inter-moon events.
See, I feel like the event of all 3 lining up is going to be one that happens very rarely and is a huge deal
maybe
to
like
everyone.
Every 5 years or something like that.
Have you heard that they want to maybe some people are maybe looking at our moon and trying to reclassify it as a planet because it's so much bigger than in comparison to us than most moons are to any other system,
except for Pluto. But then they declassified Pluto.
Pluto, yeah.
I would disagree with that.
That we are a binary planet system rather than being...
Unless they called it Moon still. If it was a planet called Moon, I'd be down.
The name is Luna.
I don't think that makes sense because the center of gravity is still within our planet.
Right.
It's not outside. It's I mean, because then you could be like, oh, well then, you know, the sun, you know, the center of gravity of the Earth to the sun is still inside the sun, but the Earth does make the sun wobble. I don't know. That's any gravitational.
Well, no, it's the comparison to size when we compare to just any other relationship mm-hmm. in our solar system. It's the closest. It's way different than any other relationship.
Except for Pluto.
What do you mean? Pluto and what?
And its moon.
Oh, it has a moon? I didn't even know it
had
a moon.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the relationship is even bigger. Like, they're much closer in size.
I don't know. It's kind of like saying a giant tumor is a human.
Which I would agree with more so. I think if you name it, it's a person. That's just how it works.
Yeah. That's what I did with my hernia. Henry, the hernia.
Henry, the hernia. I like that.
Do you have a service for him when he goes?
No. He'll still just be there. He'll just be in fishnets forever.
Yeah, that's true. You have a little net, a little mesh. Okay. So let's say that it's not a perfect eclipse, but it can happen once a month. Like, it'll cross its face once a month in some way. So every 30 days.
No, our months are still 30 days.
We didn't break them up.
Our months are 30 days. We have seasons, but we just didn't name the months.
We have 90-day months right now. I'm telling you right now what we have.
Uh-huh.
Okay, 90-day months. We didn't name the 90-day months after seasons because that's not actually how seasons work.
Yes.
Because the solstices and the equinoxes don't take place at the end or the beginning of the month.
Yes.
Like the season, they take place in the middle. So
I still don't think we should have 90-day months.
I honestly don't understand any objection to this.
It's the same term for a vastly different frame of reference in the game.
Well, we could call it something else.
I'm saying, we shouldn't call them months. And you should still have months, and there's just 3 months in a quarter.
But why this instead of, like, why take issue with that instead of the 10-day weeks?
Because 10 to 3 is something you can wrap your head around much easier than the difference between 30 and 90. One of them is a magnitude. One of them is an increase by less than half.
But we don't track things...
In months, we totally do.
That's not what I was going to say. We don't, when we say like it's several months from now, we are actually in our heads doing a conversion where we track the number of days and break it into months. If it's 90 days, we say it's 3 months, even though it's not 3 months. Even though one of those months might be February. Like we track it by number of days. I mean, honestly, we could just have a calendar that said 360 and we are on day 25 of 360.
I definitely don't track days
that
way.
And then you name every year instead of every month. Yeah.
If you said 3 months, I think I have internalized what 3 months roughly
is. Just like you internalize 3 miles, but that doesn't mean that that's better or worse than kilometers.
True, but we're now not talking about the difference between kilometers and miles. We're talking the difference between feet and miles.
We're talking about Quiblon, remember? So maybe these are Quiblons versus months, and now we're talking about that now. It's arbitrary.
Only it's not arbitrary because we already have the association with months. And we should just... we're already using weeks. Let's use weeks, months, and even rather than seasons, just quarters.
Quarters is good.
Quarters is good.
Yeah.
So 90-day quarters?
Yeah, I like quarters.
Okay.
Yeah, because I gotta be honest with you. I don't want to name every month, because in every RPG I've played where you name every month and it tells you when the next thing's going to happen, it's a fucking nightmare. I've played it in Kingmaker, I've played it in Skyrim. I have no idea what the first of Frostfall means. I have no
That's
idea.
That's true.
I don't know. But if you say the first quarter of this year, I know exactly what you mean.
Cool. Four quarters.
And we can name the quarters if we want to.
They would probably go along with our four high holy days, right?
I don't know. I think probably, because it's not a season, right? Because these events take...
They bisect them, yeah.
Right. They take place in the middle. But we could name them after the transition, right? Because those take place in the middle and they signal the end of one and the beginning towards the other.
Mm-hmm.
We could name them after that, if that makes sense. So this is too basic, but Snowmelt, you know, is the one that follows the...
Winter into spring.
Exactly. And then the one, you know, spring into summer, from summer to fall, that kind of thing. Yeah. So we just name the transition. That's the quarter. Don't worry about that.
That actually makes, in my opinion, way more sense than the way we think of seasons are odd.
When
you really start to think about them, when you think that, the end of the year just happens in the middle of a season. Great. Cool. Thanks. Thanks for doing that to my brain.
There is nothing intuitive about our current calendar.
Oh, yeah.
It's even the names of them are actively misleading. Like the names of the months, December.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be the 10th month.
Yeah.
We had to actively add in roughly 20 to 28 days in a year.
You think of just September, October, November, December.
Mm-hmm.
The fact they didn't add the additional months after those is nightmarish.
Bananas.
It's terrible.
You want to give yourself the cool summer months.
Yeah.
You're not going to dig yourself over with November, December.
July and August were not the months that were added. They were renamed.
Yeah.
February and January were added.
And they should have been after December.
And the reason why January is called January is it's a transitional period, and it's named after Janus, the god of hallways and transitions.
And judgment.
And the bad guy in GoldenEye 64.
And the Keymaker in The Matrix. We could do this all day.
Yeah, and Janus, the nice librarian.
And so, Janis Joplin, which has no... That's just a coincidence.
They named it after her.
Or the Good Place.
So let's get... All right, so I don't want to name those right now. I think we'll do those next. So we got our moon phases. We got a 10-day orbit, a 28-day orbit, and they cross each other's face every 30 days. How often does a perfect eclipse happen with both moons? Let's say twice a year?
Okay. Rather than the fate just touching faces?
Directly in the center, it looks like an eye looking down at you.
So rather than passings or meetings, an embrace.
Ooh.
Well, I think the visual of it literally looks like an eyeball, because you've got the big white one and then the pupil.
Now, if they're crossing every 30 days, that means it's happening three times a quarter. So some reference to those eclipses in the names of the little intersecting breakdowns would probably make a lot of sense. So first, second, and third eclipse would be how they break it up inside those quarters.
The problem is that because it's a 28-day orbit, it shifts every year. Every year is different of when that will happen and where the moon is in that position.
Gotcha.
Ooh. If the day of reckoning happens while it's an eyeball... That would be especially.
Yeah. Ooh, that would be terrifying.
Maybe in just all of their literature, important events happen on those days, but catastrophes and really important events, they'll wait for a coronation until the perfect eclipse of the sun and two moons, you know, because it's like the bright eye.
Yeah, there'd be skipped eclipses because they would eclipse themselves while the Earth is eclipsing them.
A lunar eclipse. Well, they would say a closed eye or something like that, right? Could be. Or that could just never be true, just because of how the dice roll on that.
No, that would be...
Because of the 5-degree tilt, there could be only one way that they intersect.
I guess.
I'm trying to say. I mean, I don't really know. I can actually pull up... Don John will actually build you a calendar to your specifications and put in the moon phases. But that's only relevant for that year, unless your moon phases are perfectly divisible by the number of days in your year, which ours are not.
Yeah.
Let's see, because we have 364 days in our calendar. So the perfect lunar eclipse is eyeball, that's twice a year, right? Or we can make it so that one's open, one's closed. One is the Earth is not eclipsing it. The
other one is...
The one is, yeah, they're black.
It's a perfect eclipse in the wrong direction.
Can you... wrong direction? What do you mean?
It would be, rather than having sun, big moon, little moon, Earth, it would be big moon, little moon, Earth, sun.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. Yeah, okay. So where the shadow of the Earth eclipses them. Yes.
But it would still require a weird perfect eclipse, which is awesome.
So that happens twice a year, but the one where they all line up in the sun with the sun, maybe once every 10?
Yeah.
10 years?
Okay. So every 40 quarters?
Yes. The math checks out on that, yes.
Cool.
Although it can happen outside of the quarters.
It's as many quarters as Lex Luthor stole pies.
Lex Luthor famous for stealing pies?
Yeah, he stole 40 pies. That's as many as 4 tens, and that is terrible.
Yeah.
What did he do with them all?
I don't know.
I would hope he ate them. I mean, well, if you're going to steal pie.
He didn't get away with it for long.
So he ate like 4 of them maybe?
He got like through 2 before Superman caught him. Come on.
What the fuck is Superman doing catching a dude for stealing pie when there's train crashes and all kinds of shit?
It was cakes. I'm sorry.
Oh.
So when Noah was looking, Lex Luthor took 40 cakes. He took 40 cakes. That's as many as 4 tens, and that's terrible.
I just think Superman has other shit to do.
I agree, but that's a lot of cakes.
That is a lot of
somebody
cakes.
Somebody is appropriately angry about this, I feel.
Look,
like.
Look, he has beef with Luthor. We all know it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like if anybody else stole 40 cakes, he probably wouldn't have got involved.
But he's like, Luthor's up to something.
Yeah.
Why does he need 40? That's as many as 4 tens.
He should just kill Lex Luthor.
Yeah, he should.
Be done with it.
I feel like somebody should. Like, just some cop should take one for the team, right? And just be like, blam, yep. Fine, take me to jail. Did what you could in Supes.
And he's like, yeah, I literally can't, because that'd be very bad figuratively for me as a symbol.
What if he said, it's so hard because I can't kill him? Like a public statement where he's like, I can't do it.
Want someone rid me of this vexatious priest?
No. I mean, I really hope somebody doesn't do it.
I think I read this comic book, only it was the Joker, and it ended very badly.
That might not have been a comic book, because that's more or less the Dark Knight.
It happens in Kingdom Come.
Okay.
Superman stands next to Lex Luthor and has someone shoot at him. Bullet bounce off Superman, hits Lex.
That's great.
How about this? Kills Lex Luthor, has Martian Manhunter impersonate him for the rest of his life.
Martian Manhunter would hate that.
He would. He gets to just now use his money to do good things.
What? He doesn't want money.
Kills Lex Luthor, invents a better hamburger.
Just starts a pie-making company.
Everything's forgiven.
Yeah. All right. So this brings up the larger topic of the idea of cataloging your time in a campaign. How? Let's talk about that. So say you're in a campaign where the seasons actually do matter, and the holidays are really baked into the lore, where adventure paths are written with these in mind, given the given year or whatever. Certain armies will only fight in this time of year. Like in 300, they wouldn't fight during the Carnea. Does it remove your fun? So I can imagine a tedium associated with it that we can build tools to remove, but I would say that if you wanted to ignore it, you just can.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It seems very optional.
Right. But how do we make it engaging so where it really empowers the player to be like, wait, this took how many days? Okay, so that means I've got this and this and this, and this is what I'm planning. Because here's the thing that something I run into a lot when I'm playing other tabletop RPGs is everything kind of happens one after the other. Like, you go on an adventure, and there's zero downtime for like a month.
Yeah.
You know, you're even going to a city, but like, no, you have to leave immediately to solve this problem. I don't think that really tracks with even how adventure stories are told. You know, it's
certainly not Lord of the Rings.
No, I mean, think of Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings, Indiana Jones. Like, these are, you have long periods of downtime.
Samuel Tarly gets to the world's biggest library and then just reads every book until he finds the one he needs.
Yeah.
Like,
that almost feels like the mechanics there that you want to build in are less for the player and more for the DM. Like, because his pacing, or his or her, I should say, their pacing on how they progress the story to make it interesting without undermining the rotation of dailies to keep combat from being too overpowered.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that falls on the pace of the story to integrate those things.
100% agree. However, I feel like you can outsource some of this to the player. If here's the problem with doing the outsourcing to the player of tracking these things in D&D and Pathfinder is, one, there's very little benefit. And when you get to a big town in Pathfinder, as long as your GM says it's okay, you can buy everything, like absolutely everything in the world, like you, except for unique items. You can just go, oh, I'm going to go talk to the most powerful wizard in the city, and he can cast ninth level spells, so he can build this thing as long as I've got enough money. And that is fun-ish, except for because of that fact being true, you have less downtime and you have less opportunity. So instead, returning to town with your money is treated like a quest reward. Maybe it shouldn't be. Does that all make sense? Was that coherent?
Yeah, but I mean, okay. I think we already had the discussion where, like, magic items are a thing that can be made. Rarely, you're more. I think we already established you're more likely to just go out and find them in buried place. Like, there's more magical items buried than are being made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the crafting system
uses
a day. Like, it takes a certain number of days mm-hmm. to craft, which that would help considerably with that very problem. Because if you give an incentive for the players to spend the time in town to do the crafting, then that's going to help push that time forward.
And it's true. And every time I've played a campaign in a Dungeons & Dragons scenario or a Pathfinder, you know, like scenario, that has always been heavily discouraged. You know, of crafting, where because they just want to keep the story moving, and they don't realize that it's not boring for you to say, okay, you spend 10 days there, and now on this next day, this next thing happens. Like you can just skip.
I don't even huge think it's. I don't even think it's cheaper. I don't think it's actually cheaper. Like functionally cheaper.
What do you cheaper? You
can
money
get you wise? Can get someone else to do it for you for the almost the same amount of money, and then leave, go do something else, and then come back and have it be done.
Except for because of the way these adventures are written, your time in town is precious, and you never know when you're going to get it back. And I don't mean that in the way of like, well, every day you leave your house, you don't know if you're ever going to come back. I mean, like, it is, you'll get thrown in a prison for 3 months, and then you come back to town for 2 days, and then you're out adventuring for another month because of an event you didn't expect to happen. It's just not, it's not set up that way, which is, I think, not really how adventures go, except in this. Like, in almost any adventure story, in the majority of these big epic adventure stories, the people have to take a break on their own, and then they have to collectively decide the kind of thing they're going to do next. That's usually what happens in these kind of stories.
And but that already matches in with a couple of the mechanics that we have built in mm-hmm. already, because injuries, we do not deal with them the same way.
No, not at all. And I do. So, the main question I'm getting to is, how much downtime should players expect in a campaign that we run in this game? Now, I'm not saying GMs have to do this. I'm saying if we're going to set an expectation the way that these other systems do, that we're going to write adventure paths for, how much downtime is appropriate?
Well, I think it should vary. There's a difference between we're running Die Hard.
Sure.
You could have an entire adventure path, 6 full sessions planned out, and it's in one building, and it's in one night. That's your whole thing. You can level up in combat, but you could also do The Hobbit. There should be a wide variable amount. Like, I think travel, healing, crafting, what we need to know, I think the thing that will define how much downtime we have is, what are you doing? That is going to define the downtime. I don't want to do it the other way around.
I don't want to go,
this is how much downtime we need.
No,
so
no.
This is the amount of shit we have to fill that downtime with. I want to fill the shit with downtime in and then go, well, how much reasonable time can we get to that?
We have, like, armor. We have crafting. We've made this thing. For those kind of people who want that, that hasn't been given to anyone.
Here's what I run into, and it's really how the campaigns are written.
We're supposed to be living in a medieval world, but we have like Walmart. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You should be fixing your things. You should be. So, and we're not trying to force that, like, sharpen your sword kind of thing. But
so what this comes to is that we got through a campaign arc. It was an entire book of a Pathfinder campaign, and multiple character deaths. Huge epic story, like showdown of the boss fight, all this enormous shit. And then when I went back and look at my journal that I keep for my character, it had been less than a week. We're talking 6 months of playtime. When I looked at that, I was just like, that can't be right, because we didn't meet week to week. It didn't feel like it would happen that fast. Otherwise, role-playing as this character, I would be playing it very differently.
Yeah.
If I was like, wait, 4 people died yesterday. we just met, like, this other person walks into our camp immediately after that person dies and is like, I'm here to join your group. Like, it's just, it's insane. Like, it comes across completely crazy when you actually think about it in the terms of how it's going. So when I say how much downtime the characters should experience, I'm not saying we regiment it, but I'm trying to think of, like, how should we design campaigns so that they don't feel like that? So, for instance, when we did Echoes, right, mm-hmm. there was a very quick amount of time between you discovered the Howards, Forsha goes into the thing, and you rest the night before, and then you're in that dungeon. You can't – that's obviously all happening in one day. But I felt like because you're in the same dungeon, the pacing of how frantic you should feel was maintained.
Yeah.
For this. You were saving your dailies. You hadn't used them yet.
But let's say your character has a fight where they could die. Like, you are in fear for your life, and then sure. You go back to town. Do you not spend 2 days just kind of being like, oh, shit?
100%. Yeah. I absolutely agree.
You don't just go, okay, we sleep, and then we run back out. It's like, hey, I want to take a shower and just, like, like have a beer. I just almost died.
I think
I have to tell a lot of people I love them now. Like, that has become a huge priority to me as a person, because I think I have the lifespan of a mayfly now for my profession that I've picked. I'm pretty sure. I think I'm James Bond now.
Speaking of that, are we universally literate, or what are we doing here?
Universally literate, can you explain?
Everyone can read and write.
I think... Well, read and write what language, too. Yeah. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, we haven't decided on languages yet, and we'll get into that. Because we know
that's a big conversation.
Yeah, and it's cultural, right? So it's regional. So the reason I bring this up is because I feel like there's, if we actually think about it in these terms, which we have been generally, but if we put this as a focus, so the way that conditions work, the way that crafting works, we are allowing for extended periods of downtime. But what that means is that we can make it so that money doesn't solve all your problems, right? Money and access to a city doesn't solve all your problems. You can't just be like, well, I want to buy a +6 greatsword. It's like, can you imagine a +6 greatsword, even in the world of Pathfinder, should be a hidden holy relic that nobody can even mention that they actually have. You know, it is so powerful. In ours, I feel like
because
that could
if
be
you were a level 1 character, you were like, oh, I guess I run my neighborhood now.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
anyone who fights me has less than 6 hit points. If I hit them, they are dead.
Yeah. Minimum damage, they will die.
I feel like momentum might be key to the answer on the downtime, because if you incorporate a framework for momentum rewards, because that's one of the things that really drew me in when you started telling me about this system, because it felt like the BioWare game of tabletop, in that you could design an entire encounter that gave experience and leveled someone up, and no one ever drew a sword. You have this entirely political thing going on. Mm-hmm. Everyone levels up. Their character still progressed. And if combat now comes, they've still made forward momentum as a character. So momentum rewards offering experience, kind of like Skyrim does, RuneScape, you know, crafting mm-hmm. offers a little bit of momentum. Interactions with non-player characters offering momentum while you're in town give the incentive to have them explore the
completing
town and kill time.
That's
tasks.
True. And bullshitting with a shopkeeper, like you're like you're saying, like, you can earn momentum off of that.
And if you craft chainmail that's taken you the, you know, 2 quarters or whatever mm-hmm. of just working on when you can, like, that should be a momentum boom.
Maybe because I think there's an opportunity for.
Well, I think in the way that we give out momentum, like, that was a cool fucking thing your character did.
Yeah.
Why would we not reward you doing that cool thing?
Well, I think
because you're being rewarded by getting the chainmail already.
Yeah, but you wouldn't reward a character as a GM who did that?
If you did a lot of cool flair when you got it done and then did something cool with it. Ooh. Yeah, I don't think making the thing is not what's cool. The purpose of it.
Here's where I think it'll change the behavior of how you do it. Is you'll be like, I'm going to make a thing that's going to take 7 days. And the GM will be like, what is it? And I'm like, you'll find out. And then when you reveal it, the GM will be, all right, +1 momentum. That's the difference, right? You'll be like, yes. That, well, in that
with
moment.
The crafting, like, we're just opening this to people who like that. I'm not saying everyone's going to like it.
No,
but
modular. Kick it out if you want.
Yeah,
you don't want it.
There are people who are going to be like, hell yeah, give me that. And that's it's not for everyone, but
And there might be people who only meet once a month or every other month, and their immediate reaction is, fuck that shit.
Yeah.
We need to move this faster.
Yeah.
More combats. We need to get going. So, yeah, I do want to put in rules for downtime, and mm-hmm. I do, but I also would like that if you want to remove that bit from this system.
Mm-hmm.
You just because you don't meet enough. If you're meeting once a week, I could see you every three sessions being like, fuck it, we're having a town day. We're just going to do some cool role play. Mm-hmm. We're just going to hang out today. We're going to get a bunch of accounting shit done. We're going to talk about real estate. Who gives a shit?
So in the D&D campaigns that I've run, I cut out the crafting mechanics entirely as a GM. Like, I was just like, just trust me. I'm going to make the treasure hoards that you get. I'm going to make them appropriate for your characters. I don't care about you guys going to town, doing whatever. But even in that one, because of that, there was a lot of downtime. You guys had a huge, like, world-spanning adventure. But I was like, yeah, it takes you, you know, 3 weeks to take a boat there. And now those 3 weeks are over, and you're there. You know, to Utz, I was worried that you were going to bring this up because I think it is a glaring flaw in our naming scheme. I started thinking about it as you were talking. The idea of downtime and momentum. It's like, don't you lose momentum? You know, I mean, in the idea of like, you have to stop, you're losing momentum.
Yeah.
I don't think so, because it's not how it works in fantasy stories, and that's the kind of story we're telling.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's also what it offers you is you can flesh out the modules. You can have crafting steps at that point, which incentivizes momentum for going and buying a piece of armor. Isn't a moment. Crafting that first piece of plate mail yourself, that is that's a character
it
moment.
Could
like
absolutely
you, your smithing and the work you put in got you there, and you have the ability to add like more layers to the crafting, but you can also just ignore that entirely.
Yeah.
Or even, oh no, I don't have a crafting skill. I need this thing to be made. I'm going to go talk to this guy. He knows how to make it. He's like, I'll make that for you. I'll need this much amount of money, but I also need this thing that I don't have.
Yeah.
Go find it.
Yeah. Side quest.
What I was thinking too, is this.
Sorry. Or.
I still have to keep turning boots up. What I was also thinking is that per the idea that you don't tell the GM something, momentum in these moments actually incentivizes surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Which is actually. So you could be like, well, this, you know, surprise is not something you want when you're trying to manage a complex group, but it is something you want with storytelling. You do want your armorer to surprise your mage with the perfect item, you know, after a week of crafting, nobody knows what they're up to, because that's a great story moment.
I made you the lightest chainmail possible.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
40 pounds.
No, it weighs -7 pounds.
Oh shit!
Yeah, you have to wear it, or else it floats away like a balloon.
In fact, I built a special box for it. It is exactly 6.5 pounds. It'll just float next to you. It's amazing.
You know, it's funny. That's
a floating disc.
That's very reminiscent of the second half of the Mistborn series.
Brian Sanderson. Boo.
Brandon, you heretic.
I actually enjoy the series. It's a good one.
Heresy.
He's a turtle dove guy.
He's capable of storing a percentage of his weight in this metal contraption that he wears. Because it's Avatar basically with metals.
Okay.
And not blue people, but Airbender.
Okay.
And so he goes around constantly. And it's like this Western kind of almost... it was Will Smith. It was
Wild West.
Thank you, Wild Wild West.
Okay, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
Because it starts. The first three books are like in the medieval times, and then you go flash forward to the second arc, and the characters you followed in the first three are now the mythology and the gods.
Oh, I've not gotten to the second.
So it's
arc
like
yet.
A Chronicles of Narnia type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so then the main character, he can use this ability where he stores a little bit of his weight, and he's this like gunslinging lawman running around. And he'll just evaporate all his weight and shoot his gun, and it just launches him off to the side because he now weighs like 8 pounds.
Dope.
That's awesome.
I love the railway system where there's just metal buried in the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you can pull yourself towards metal, so if you just have infinite metal, you fly.
That's awesome. Okay. So last bit about calendars this episode.
All right.
What kind of tools? Think about it from your perspective. You are all different players, right? What tools do you want to make this easy? Like to make it so that it's not even a second thought. Like, oh yeah, tracking the days, no problem. Where if I handed you a tool and you have your character sheet, you don't feel burdened with the responsibility of tracking your days.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This might be the point where you need someone to delegate that and have an extra sheet for them.
So making a sheet with 360 boxes on it, 364 boxes on it, trivial.
Yes.
You can make it for every year with the moon phases included. Easy.
Mm-hmm.
But is a sheet that just lays out that many days and you say you start on, like you write the year at the top and you tell them the start day and they can just mark off the start day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, okay, 10 days have passed. Check. Done. Is that easy?
Yeah. I think there's a section of people who would really enjoy that, and then people who would not use it at all. So
sure.
Here's the thing. I think you just need to find the person at the table who is willing to do that. You only need one. You only need one timekeeper.
That's what I mean. Like, you only need one person. Because here's my thing. To play a mage in other systems, they ask so much more from mage players, from wizard players, than they do from rogues.
Yeah.
And I say rogues and not fighters because fighters have a lot of tactical responsibilities. You don't really, if you're just like, if you're a barbarian, you're like, I run in, I rage, I hit him. Like, that's all you're thinking about. I think that's the person you ask to keep track of time. You know, so for instance, the most complicated paths in our current system are command and decay.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any argument there. Those two people have an enormous amount of responsibility to track moment to moment. Whereas somebody who's, say, champion, I would hand them the calendar.
I don't think this applies for that because the wizard is complex in prep. They are complex not only in combat but before combat. Command is not any more no step other than maybe late decay based on maintaining creatures requires pre-planning. I don't think
You're
not going to look at your calendar.
The scale is
in
different.
Combat. That's what I'm saying. We're like,
the scale is different. I do think that command needs to know more about everybody else.
That is true.
Than anyone else does.
They need to know your basic attack.
Well, they need to know
at the very least.
They need to know a lot more than that, especially when we get into movement granting.
Yeah, I mean that was one of the hardest things to jump into that warlord that we test ran was not only did I have to try to memorize the sheet I had in front of me. But I had to keep track of Katie's abilities. I had to think kind of four-dimensionally as the group.
Yeah, I wouldn't say give this to the person with the least amount to do in combat or the least amount of thinking to do. I would actually say who is making executive decisions. Don't give it to that person.
Or, I mean, people
Give it to the person who is logistically minded.
Well, here's another thing. If you only have one crafter, that's who should be using it.
Oh, easy.
Yeah.
Right? The person who's crafting cares about it.
And the GM, I was going to say the GM could use that, but like...
Yeah.
You have a quarter to solve this, and then that is now an imperative tool of everybody.
Absolutely agree, but I feel like if we can give the people playing this game tools to outsource campaign tracking responsibility away from the GM, GMs are going to have more fun.
Yeah.
And be able to do more fun stuff.
Absolutely.
And it makes it feel less adversarial,
yeah.
Which is, I think, a huge goal of this game system to begin with.
Yeah.
Where, like, when you read horror stories or even just people talking about their game group, you realize, like, oh, you guys don't like each other and aren't having fun, so I don't know why you're doing this.
Lack of synergy.
Yeah. Well, they feel like I'm playing against my DM, or their DM feels like I'm playing against my players. Mm-hmm. I feel like we do a better job of making that less inherent in the system.
Yes, but it's also, I feel like people are still going to try to play that way.
Oh, totally.
There's no way to get around that except for incentive. Like, if we remove friction for playing that way, if we make it obvious that that's the better path, it'll be better for more people. Yeah. But
they aren't playing like a fantasy SWAT team.
No.
They aren't playing like the Fellowship.
Well, it comes down to, like, in every RPG, like, my experience is much more the MMO world, but you have two types.
If you don't play as a team in the MMO world...
You suck.
You're the worst player.
When they started adding in like the heirlooms and stuff to World of Warcraft, where you could go back over the lower.
Oh, yeah.
You had two types of people. The type who, even though it wasn't necessary, everyone stayed together as a group because that's how they were trained to play the game. And you had that one warrior in the Might Pauldrons who ran forward in front of the group through the entire instance and just tried to cleave everything to death and pull the whole instance at once.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your two main players. Like, they will, there's always that person only who without
the
care.
Power. Yeah. They don't have the power to do that. That's the thing that drives me nuts.
Well, I feel like those people do that even when they don't.
And
I think it's fun to do it when you don't.
All right, Leroy.
It can be fun, but only if it's a choice in a moment, not this is just the thing I do. I ruin your time always. You know? Yeah.
I do want to take it aside for a second. Have you heard about the insane WoW Classic debacle that's happening right now?
Yes.
I've heard a little bit of...
They had to release an entire forum post of, these are not bugs, these are features, and it's like a 42-item list of like, yes, the hitboxes and range is different for Taurens.
Yep.
That was true in 1.0. That is a feature.
Yeah. Well, everyone had rose-colored glasses. And now they're actually doing it and they don't like it.
Or like in Level Up, it does not tell you that your proficiencies have changed. That was a 1.012 update.
Yeah.
So here's another thing. A simple calendar, it can be on one sheet. People can just cross things off, right? The only people who give a shit about it are people who craft things,
mm-hmm.
the GM, and people who are suffering from conditions.
And people who just like calendars.
Yeah, us.
Or people who want to be building businesses, people who want to be learning new skills or training different languages.
Great, mm-hmm. great points to that. Like, we haven't talked about how you learn languages.
The amount of, like, and I...
The fact that it's tied to Level Up in other systems is wrong.
Is garbage. Well, like, that was one of the first house rules I ever read about, was, like, you need this many hours of conversing with a proficient speaker.
Mm-hmm.
To learn a language. And it was a lot of hours. It was a couple hundred. And to get that, that would take months of in-game time picking off your like, oh, I'm only going to do it for like an hour or two anytime. Am I going to like learn French? But you do it over the course of a thing where you're like, man, I know Orcish now. And there's only two people in my group who know Orcish.
Yep.
Jokes, motherfucker. Well, that's all we're doing all day.
Trod and Mangrove have payroll to meet now.
You mean Trod?
I think we are all partners. There's a sign. I think you need to
listen back to that last episode.
We're on the sign.
Bizzleby, Mandergrove, and Trod.
Yeah.
That's what it said.
I know. I had to put him up front because he was in a
He's depression. a famous author.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did all the paperwork. Whatever.
Yeah, Esmond would have the calendar for sure of that group.
God, so much.
Don't even need to craft.
Kelton would have another calendar. It'll be all wrong.
Yeah. No symmetry.
He's like, is this the wrong year? Yeah. This is the wrong year.
It's fine.
This doesn't have enough days on it. What are you doing?
Where did you even get this?
Yeah. Tell me where you got this.
It's got the lady illegal. In a car.
It's just a Michelin calendar from 1957.
Yeah.
Real quick, Command needs a better step 4.
Okay.
So right now they've got an ability where they can add damage to the attack. It's 2+ their intellect for every attack they grant in damage to the attack, which is good. It's fine. It's nothing really like...
meaty.
Yeah, there's nothing really like fun in that. And Command needs to be fun. I really do feel like you should feel like you're kind of pulling one off on everybody when you're playing Command. Almost always.
This might not be right for step 4, but what if we just had your whole party could shuffle?
Reorganize?
Just switch orders, yeah.
Do you want to do switch seats like you play musical chairs when it happens?
No, I don't want to do that because we record.
So no, us, yeah. But yeah, okay. But
So no.
Everybody switch character sheets.
So we call that perfect timing. They get 2+ your intellect. What else?
That's good. I want to keep that.
We talked about Standard Bearer.
Yeah.
We talked about it for Citadel. which definitely is not...
You're right.
That's not correct, mm-hmm. right? We gave Citadel Heraldry instead, where it improved them passively permanently, right?
Uh-huh.
What if you got an ability called Standard Bearer, where allies who can see you gain a permanent buff?
I like this.
That you get to pick.
Ooh, I was going
to
say... Maybe.
That you get to pick that does not affect you.
I was thinking maybe like an That's aspect, good. You know, where you have a flag and you pick that flag for that battle.
I'm saying it's one mm-hmm. you pick the thing. You
Inspiring go, you presence fits the flavor.
Yeah, like it. But mm-hmm. but the idea is like you're the standard bearer because that's the job in war of a standard bearer.
Yeah,
right?
You picked your company colors.
Right. You come out there with the standard, and it's just like this is what you're fighting for. Everyone, remember it. That's it. Like, and the idea is it increases your valor.
Like the last scene in Glory.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Because I just want to be sad.
Yes, it is like the last scene in Glory, except for. Well, hopefully you'll live.
I mean, I guess in the long run, yeah.
Yeah, they did. They died. They all died, though.
Powerful Ferris.
Spoiler alerts for Glory.
Ferris Bueller dies in it.
Yeah.
And so does Morgan Freeman and Denzel Washington. And Denzel Washington. Actually, everyone in that whole movie dies. All of them. All of them are dead because it's set in the Civil War and it's 2019. All of them are dead. I'm sorry, guys.
That is true.
They're all dead. They're all real people and they're all dead now.
This is a clam. Let's move on. So Standard Bearer, we could put that in step four. What do you
Sounds
think?
Good.
We mm-hmm. add it to the +2 to intellect?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe should you pick one and it's a permanent passive bonus within a 30-foot range, or do you get a choice between three things and you pick it for that combat and you don't get to change it?
I would like you to pick one thing.
I agree.
That is your... That's the hill you decided to die on.
Okay. So Citadel gets +1 to dodge. Mm-hmm. They get... +2 to opportunity attacks. They get things like that. Endurance and damage against specific enemies. What's different?
Because it's everyone, I think we have to pick more general things.
Yeah, what if it's...
Because like +1 to damage, super great, I guess, if you're a damage character. Mm-hmm. If that's what you do.
Well, but it applies to everybody, right? What is a non-damage character in our system? Is there one?
Yeah.
What?
Tanks.
Tanks deal damage.
No, not really.
They do.
I feel like the presence would be a chance to hit. Like command is all about direction, so that bonus would be to your chance to hit.
Or movement.
I think chance to hit's good. Maybe increase the amount of opportunity attacks everybody gets by one.
Oh, I like that.
Just the number, right? Increase by one.
Yeah.
Per round. What else is general?
Movement.
Well, Citadel gets the +1 to move.
But everyone can use movement is the whole thing.
What's a good movement thing? Maybe +2 to your dodge against opportunity attacks.
Yeah. How about this? You don't get a +1 to movement, but when you disengage, you can disengage 2 squares.
We already got a lot that does that.
What does that?
Both Citadel and Zealotry.
Okay.
Resistance to slow or resistance to difficult terrain.
That's good.
I like that.
I like the idea of resistance is good. We've already done things that give you resistance against composure stuff.
How about just straight up, you ignore one armor. Your armor busters. Your siege.
That's not bad. That's not bad. What's something associated with bravery?
Dude, regen. Mm. Very minor regen. Even if it's only... 2 hit points, a tick, a turn.
A D4.
Ooh. If that's happening every turn. Mm-hmm. Well, also, you could just, if you just don't have a lot of healing going on, you could just pick that, and then suddenly that covers a lot of breaks.
Yeah.
I like that.
I was trying to think of a reason that a D4, adding a D4 of armor to everybody. I think mechanically, so we're talking about step 4, which is actually pretty far, right?
Yeah.
I think mechanically, you're all level 3 minimum by this time. I think mechanically, it works, but I can't think of a reason why a flag would give you more armor.
It's also not that, because adding 3 armor to someone with no armor or 1 armor is not crazy, but because you can have 6 armor and shielding and then stack that and then be sitting at possibly 14 damage reduction, that... Even with things that ignore armor, I think the most we do that with the way that even bashing weapons work is like 6.
How about it increases everybody's max HP by your level.
That's what I was just about to say. Something to do with HP increase.
Yeah, only when you're within range.
A sight, I think, would be a good one. That's a good one. Divinity Original Sin does it. There's a talent you can take right off the bat that increases, I think it's like Dex and Charisma by two of anybody who can see you as the leader.
Yeah, so we're level four. I want to give them five extra HP. I'll say two plus your level.
I almost like sight too, because it could work in a situation where even if you're outside of the combat, where you're like, you were injured the day before and you're up on a hill and you're in a tent and you just wake up and there is a fight going on beneath you, you could just leave the tent and raise your flag, and then everyone in the valley below you who is your party would still just look at it and go like, boys.
Yep.
I think the time has come for us to take this very seriously.
We were talking when I got here, Brad Pitt and Troy. When Achilles hit the field, everyone who was around him fought harder.
It's interesting because if we were to build Achilles, we would absolutely build him as champion.
Definitely. No questions asked.
But there is a bravery component to it. Yeah. So maybe he is like step one command. But he's not really that good of a leader.
No, he's not.
Odysseus was more
Odysseus.
Of a command.
Odysseus was command and scoundrel.
Command and marksman, too. Shot through the...
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. So...
That was with the help of the gods, I think, at that point, though?
No, it was explicitly not. It was explicitly with rejecting the help of the gods. All right, so two plus your level in HP, right?
Okay.
Max HP. So that will be five HP at level three, which is when you can earliest get step four.
Which is not insane.
I think it's good, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That one's good. Plus one to attack for everybody? Is that too bland?
No, as long as it's stacked.
Here's the thing. I think it's bland, but also universally, like, no matter what your party composition is, mm-hmm. that works. That's why it's good.
I don't want to give him dodge. I don't think that doesn't feel right for standard bearer. So we've got that HP, which feels like bravery, plus one to attack, which feels like everybody's fighting harder.
Yeah. Opportunity attacks. I like it.
Oh, you get one extra opportunity attack? Okay.
Yeah.
You don't have a corset at all. That could come in really nice. That can come in very handy. And if you have a core citadel, you might look at that and go like, do I need it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because also...
Or just straight up two marksmen.
Or five extra HP. Think about that from the perspective of somebody who... So Andrew, you're going to play a healer. You can immediately see where that buffer five HP, you'll take it every time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like getting an extra melee level worth of HP.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be very useful.
Okay. I like this. I'm happy with this. You bear a standard. Do you have to set it down? Do you carry it? Because people can bear a standard that looks like a scepter and they just hold it.
I think it could be strapped to your back even.
Yeah, like the Japanese on horseback.
Or I was thinking Space Marines, but fine.
Diablo 3.
Which is based on that, yeah.
Yeah. I think we can call the ability standard bearer, but it could literally just be like... Inspiring presence.
Your presence, yeah.
Yeah, like, you pick the thing. You have a big, dumb helmet that's just crazy looking and scary. It's got bat wings on it. People could look at the big, dumb helmet and go like, oh, the big, dumb helmet's here. Let's fucking go to town.
Cool. A cloak.
Yeah.
Very, I can't think of the very basic word, but...
Talisman bearer or something?
I mean, even a tabard, you know.
Yeah.
But that leads into the heraldry a little bit.
Yeah, it does. Well, but it's not always... So the tabard isn't always... So, for instance, we think of the Three Musketeers.
Yeah.
That wasn't heraldry, right? They're tabards.
Well, it was. They had heraldry on it. I'm just saying...
But they had individual heraldry?
Well, they had the musketeer heraldry.
It's a uniform.
It is a uniform, but it's the heraldry of the king. That's why you wore it, to show who you were fighting for. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be a tabard. I was thinking more like talisman. Like you were saying the helmet, or you were saying... Mm-hmm. You know, a goofy stick or something.
I think it should be called Standard Bearer. I think that's what the ability should be called.
Okay.
But in the description, we're just like, well, by Standard Bearer, we mean anyone who exemplifies or bears an emblem of combat that allows this to happen.
Just say you choose an emblem.
Yeah.
Yeah, choose.
You don't have to wear it. We'll just say you choose one. You get one of these three benefits.
It could be
It could literally be a song that you sing.
Yeah.
Dragon horn.
You know, Josh, one of the things I had messaged you, we were talking a little bit about marksman and rapid fire and whether or not, because the current language is do not apply your bonus to the damage.
Right.
And I was wondering about whether or not to apply that bonus to healing. And then I sat down and crunched the numbers on that. And
It's disgusting.
I came up with a case of, like, you can't do that. Like, it would be very bad.
Yeah, it would be.
Because you can build someone who just does, like,
he full heals everybody every
16
time.
Health level, every turn.
Level 1 potential of 20 health per turn.
That's ridiculous.
Guaranteed 8.
Yeah.
The best you could do is half rounded down to give I'm having trouble with basic motivation to take marksman with healing is what I was looking for.
Is there a distinct advantage to doing rapid fire to heal?
It's a guaranteed hit. Low levels, it doesn't balance out, but once you get past a certain dice roll,
with the scaling,
dazzling ray, because you can't miss.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just getting two. So late game taking marksman is very beneficial to healing.
Yeah, I'm almost thinking that, and this won't be true for what we're talking about right now, but I almost think that we should move rapid fire to
step two
core. So that way it's only with a ranged weapon.
Yeah. Okay.
And then moving covering fire to step one, you can use whatever damage type that you can do a ranged attack with.
All right.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Because somebody who's pure marksman won't notice it. Like that is
no.
The same.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was pure marksman, I was just doing rapid fire. Like,
yeah.
And it also still allows for you to be ice or fire or even radiance and being like, ooh, I do still want marksman because pinning, or not pinning sharp, but cover fire is good.
It is
cover
fire very good.
Cover fire is good control.
Well, and the feature of step one, the passive, it's when you crit.
Allies get the upper hand.
Yeah.
Against.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, so and it's just beneficial.
Just plus one to hit is pretty great.
Mm-hmm. It's not plus one to hit, though.
You get plus one to hit with all range attacks.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Core marksman, like, is such a solid thing.
Yeah, core marksman's great. Step one's good. I don't. I feel like marksman's fine.
Yeah.
Did we get a step four for marksman? Let me check.
I do have to ask a question about the change that we made to the upper hand based on not having a blanket bonus to hit. Now that you're limited to one opportunity attack, though,
mm-hmm.
which is a change we made afterwards, upper hand, I feel, took the heaviest hit from that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like the upper hand's fine.
If you can only make one attack of opportunity, and you can expend that for like one for boss characters, that adds a weird situation into it, because they get three actions a turn.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a situation in which the larger character directly benefits, like, it becomes less important for them to be surrounded.
I'm sorry, I don't follow. Because you mean, like, less, well, I don't know, I'm thinking of to the mole fight. Like, what did we change that changed?
Oh, no, the reason why that was embarrassing is Galen got unlimited.
Right.
And she hit that thing four times in a turn.
Right, I'm sorry.
I would almost say that it would be, the only thing is then the upper hand takes a pretty hard hit if you can only use it once, and then after you're expended that way,
mm-hmm.
in multiple target attacks, anyone that gets multiple attacks in a turn, or if there's multiple characters, as soon as that's done, or if someone moves across, then that threaten is gone.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I guess
it just feels less useful than at a blanket plus two at that point. On anything that happens, including on your turn.
But if they move anyway, you lose the plus two. I mean, it's the same. It's still better.
I think the thing about it is it makes it for non-defensive characters to be the advantage of getting the upper hand. If you're not Core Citadel,
mm-hmm.
is not worth the risk.
Yeah, and which I think is there's very little risk if you're just flanking somebody. It's just better for you because you might get an opportunity attack.
Unless you have to be away from your tank, which you have to implicitly.
Yeah, well, it's not. So when you say away from your tank, like, well, okay, it's not true for Scoundrel, who's generally the only person who really wants the upper hand.
Yeah, because right? You can do that next to somebody.
Well, only for one kind of attack.
Yeah.
Only for one attack, whereas you're going to try to land other shit from behind it that you don't need to do the one attack that you have in the upper hand. For clarity, you have an ability as Scoundrel where you can, if somebody's adjacent to you, you have the upper hand for that attack, mm-hmm. but it's an at will, and it does very fixed damage. if you get the upper hand, you can do your dailies, your all these things, and still get sneak attack or whatever secondary bonus you get. So Scoundrel is a high risk, high reward paradigm. Champion, not so much. Like, if you just want to put yourself in the spot where now two people can get opportunity attacks against this, that's valid too. There's a reason to do that. If you got a shield, even more so, because you can stop them from casting.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reward of getting the upper hand, not the outright damage bonus.
But the outright damage bonus on not their turn is the threatening point of that.
Yeah, for sure.
And that is, in my opinion, majorly decreased. And that
decreased compared to what, though?
Decreased compared to even just a plus two.
I disagree.
Because that would work also on attacks of opportunity, which you can very easily, if you're just regular flanked in 4th edition, it's very easy to also just proc those in that situation.
It's not, because it's not as easy. It's easier to get opportunity attacks in our system, because if they attack anybody who isn't mm-hmm. you get to do one.
Yes.
Which is not true in 4th edition.
But they can still disengage and still do it.
Yeah, but they have to move. They have, which you lose the plus two anyway if you do that. So it's just better. It's getting an extra attack is better than having a plus two.
In that use case, but the fact that it exists to begin with, like, there's no reason why you wouldn't move ever.
Except for Citadel can shut down. You cannot disengage. Like, they'll make it so you absolutely cannot do it. And then if you have somebody with a spear, if they can disengage, and if they try to run away, you can stop them from running by getting an opportunity attack, and then somebody else can move again, and you can corner them. You can get three people on them, and they can't go anywhere.
Could we have a thing where we would have you get one opportunity attack, and then one granted opportunity attack?
Well, a granted attack is just...
I know,
just
but I'm saying, attack. Like, you have your opportunity attack, but then we have things where we give opportunity attacks as well, right?
No. No? You just get an attack for free.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, which is... what an opportunity attack is, but just there's a different mechanics around it.
Okay.
Yeah, so like...
because you already have a limiter on that based on how many attacks a command could grant.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. like you can run up, do an attack, they provoke something, you get an opportunity attack, and then command could go hit them again before your turn. And those aren't... the command is only limited by the fact that they can only do that action once per round.
Yes.
If you have three people with command, you're going to get a bunch of hits against this person.
Which feels weird, but not insane. And that's also a very specific use case, so, like, let it happen. Like, don't make rules against it, because then...
No.
You're hamstringing yourself more than anything else already.
So, last order of business, before we call it, I think I want to talk about step four for marksmen.
Okay.
They don't have anything good right now. They have catch a breather, where they spend a move action, and you become suddenly aware of the enemy's positioning, and you regain the high ground. You can disengage a number of squares equal to your dex, and regain health equal to your endurance.
I like that a lot. But it's not great. You're right.
Your endurance plus composure, which is good. That's good. And I'd say give him that.
That's a solid defensive move
sure.
for an offensive class.
Maybe give them back their intelligence on rapid fire.
Not give it back. Maybe do like triple shot, maybe.
Okay.
They can all be against the same target or three different targets.
Yeah.
Once per scene.
Well, there's the classic rain of arrows trope as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what we got for covering fire.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what.
Okay.
Like volley, right?
Yeah. Gotcha.
What's we could call it volley, and we could say three arrows with full bonus against one target, or four arrows with full bonus against four targets.
In step four, are we giving a lot of interesting? I think we're giving a lot of more interesting passive things, though, right?
Well, we gave command standard bearer, uh-huh. we gave citadel heraldry, we gave death the reavers, uh-huh. the undead. But ice gets cryostasis and glacier, which are not passive. They're active mm-hmm. things that you do. Radiance got prismatic form and interference, none of which are passive,
mm-hmm.
But very cool.
But they also don't seem like the thing you're doing before, slightly harder.
Right.
I'm still...
That's the portion with marksmen that's tough, right?
Yeah, you just make their attack. We could do something where it makes their attack keens or considered high crit, where they start just doing weird burst stuff.
Well, what do we give champion? Because I feel like of all the paths... champion and marksman should generally be the thing you were doing but harder, right? Like those two. So like champion got reaping, which is it's like cleave,
mm-hmm.
and they got relentless advantage, which is a daily stance.
What? Yeah,
rather than something better than triple shot. What? Triple shot is good. Could we give them it's good.
Venom on their arrows, we have venom blades.
What? But you could just go scoundrel and get venom.
Yeah, that's the point.
That's in venom.
What damage
type
are bows?
Just ranged.
Well,
weapon.
What about your bow now gains the same bonus as daggers, where you crit on a 1 or a 20, you give that crit bonus marksmen when you go down
armor.
That far.
I like that.
Or
I
choose
like
between ignore armor and something like
screw
that.
Screw it, just make them ranged daggers. Yeah. They in your hands, they are ranged daggers.
Armor-piercing arrows were a thing in a way that using a dagger to pierce is not. So you could say, what's the other one? Cutting?
Heavy draw.
So what if we say you choose one? You get to use, you get to crit on a 1 or a 20, or you get to ignore armor by an amount equal to your strength.
Do you choose this before an encounter?
You get to switch.
Yes. Okay.
Like a stance?
Yeah. But I don't want them to have to track their arrows. That's the thing.
No, I don't feel like this is a way of shooting. This is not implicitly in their arrows.
So it's once per scene, you can choose one of these two benefits and that's it.
Heavy draw
or precision?
Or precision shots.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We could say armor piercing, which would be
Armor piercing is a thought about the arrows. Then it's like, why aren't you kind of like the idea of you just for this combat, you've decided I am overextending myself in my draw.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. Why wouldn't you always
always overdraw?
Well, you can't. Oh, okay.
Because you can't do that and place your shots as well as you want.
But I don't think that. Okay, I don't think that translates because if you have a 75-pound bow, if you're not pulling it to the same draw point, which is the furthest you should pull, you should ever pull it. Otherwise, the arrow will eclipse the bow. Then you're doing it wrong always. What if?
I mean, you're kind of basing that off of the real world, but I mean, like with rapid fire, nobody. It's either you're taking the quick shot or you're really pulling back, getting the full draw out of it to make sure it punches through the armor.
Which what we're saying is, so the reason for that in rapid fire, that's real world, is if you can do that, you can with a bow, you can fire pretty quickly, but you're not going to get the intelligence damage of shot placement is the idea. With this one, I just need some kind of justification. That's all I need. I just need a justification for why you would ignore armor. But what if... Okay, so maybe we could say armor-piercing, you ignore armor. Or we could skip armor-piercing, and we could say you do a stance where you're aiming for vitals, and you crit on a 1 or a 20. Or it's like cutting weapons.
Uh-huh.
You're learning a target's movement as they go.
Because vitals is way better. Especially if you already have a plus one.
I mean, getting everything. A plus three, you know, you never complained about it with Esmond Traub with hands and leaping flame.
Yeah, but it doesn't take a wind up. It increases your potential damage more. Like,
I don't know.
I think the thing that range needs more than hitting more often is the thing it doesn't do at all that it's worried about is armor.
Yeah. Let's.
Like, I think, as a class, they hit well enough already.
I almost think remove the critting then and just make it armor piercing. You've upgraded your bow or your crossbow, and you ignore armor by an amount equal to your strength.
What if it's based on weapon type? Because a crossbow would be more likely to punch through armor. So if you're using a crossbow...
Let's make it intelligence then. Just because your shot placement with your crossbow determines what part of the armor that you're targeting, right? So we'll just make it that. We'll make it armor and a story. Like you can just armor piercing.
You're still looking for flat spots and divots. Because if you hit rounded pieces, that's where they're flying off.
Yeah.
So are we cool with just armor piercing?
Yeah.
I feel like nobody would be upset about that, right?
Nope. No.
Okay.
And also that could increase your damage more than triple shot can.
Yeah. Well, and it's more of a steady increase compared to the random chance of the crit as well.
Yeah.
Goes up with your int. Which by this time, you could, on this level, because it's step 4, increase your int by 1.
Well, and it's also a situation where, like, rapid shot already chews up soft targets. It eats them already. Well, in a way that triple shot is going to increase the amount of that.
Up until step 4, you have zero recourse against armor as marksman. Yeah. Everything else, you're fine, right? Yeah. So you cannot choose to get through armor as marksman until step 4.
Yeah.
I think this is good. This you have, because otherwise, if you could do that at step 1, Max, you played Slish,
yeah,
a little too much, right? Like just ignoring armor outright.
Well, and it also Slish plays into the general drawback of armor. And even when I was making characters, if they had form or armor, they did not move six squares.
Nope.
Because that just didn't make sense to me. Even though that they don't have to abide by rules and you can always fudge that, it did feel like if they're heavy and they're armored, it should take a while. Like, you should be able to outpace them most of the time.
Yeah.
So you can do that as an archer, and it'll take
forever. The benefits are good
enough.
Yeah. Okay. Marksman, armor piercing. Command got a better step four. We got standard bearer.
Is that still enough for marksman?
Marksman already has the catch a breather, mm-hmm. which is to disengage a bunch of spaces and regain health, which is so clutch.
Yeah.
I think that is. I think that's really powerful.
I think if you have to choose between what heraldry can get you and armor piercing.
Yeah.
It's pretty
armor
good.
Piercing for the specific thing you're already doing punches its weight.
Yeah, well, especially because it's the only thing you can't do right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and you're not the best at it, even with that. But you're good.
Each one of your arrows has a little tabard, right?
Yeah. You have to make sure that the arrow is proud enough to reach that target.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what we're going to call it tonight. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Andrew, for joining us. We're so excited to play with you in Max's campaign.
Very excited as well. Thank you.
As always, if you want to join this conversation, if you think heraldry is stupid, if you think marksman needs something better than armor piercing, you can find us on patreon.com/RPGFS.
And you're wrong.
But you don't have to be a patron to comment. So please, you have to have a Patreon account, but that's pretty low friction. So if you want to comment, please comment on our posts. We're happy to talk about stuff with you. But at the $5 tier, you get all the rule books we make. At the $2 tier, you get all the character sheets we make. At the $1 tier, you get all the conversations we cut out of episodes like these. Which are pretty funny.
They're funnier than most average conversations.
Sure, because they're edited specifically to be funnier. But at the $10 tier, that's where the real money is. You get to make a custom character that will end up as an NPC that the characters will encounter in our actual plays. And it's been pretty fun so far. If you listen to Echoes of the Star Crypt, you've heard quite a number of them. So again, that's patreon.com/RPGFS.
You can find us on facebook.com/RPGFS.
You can find us on Instagram at RPG From Scratch, one word.
And you can also find us on Twitter, where we're trying to post more interesting stuff like GM tips, where we are at Homebrew Hombres. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.